It's Iowa Public Radio's Studio One. I'm Mark Simmet, here with Wayne Coyne, best known for his work with the Flaming Lips. Wayne is in the Cedar Valley for the opening of a solo exhibition at the Waterloo Center for the Arts. Works by Wayne Coyne featuring King's Mouth begins February 16th with a free opening reception at 7 p.m. Welcome to Iowa Public Radio, Wayne.
Oh, thank you. That was quite an introduction there. I was paying attention as if you were talking about somebody else, and it's me. You know, the solo part of it is, it's only because we don't want to give the impression that the entire band, the Flaming Lips, are here. Otherwise, most of what I do really is just doing stuff because I'm in the Flaming Lips, and the music and the visuals and all that are all still part of it. But I think we wanted to say that because we didn't want people to think, oh, the Flaming right. Lips are all there. But other than that, it's all stuff that is associated with
right.
this great, insane life that I get to have being in this group. Yeah, the group, the Flaming Lips. Yeah.
And a lot of the aspects of the exhibition will feature the Flaming Lips, right? And
yeah, so I didn't want people to get the impression, the solo always sounds
right,
weird.
Solo.
You know, you're in a group and then you want to do your solo album. And that's, I would never do that. I wouldn't have anything to do. You know, it's already so much of me within the Flaming Lips that there would be nothing left. I'm glad that I have so many great collaborators and other entities in it with me. Yeah.
Yeah. I've always I've thought of the Flaming Lips as being kind of like an art project as much as a band, and that probably has a lot to do with the fact what you were just saying. It's your vehicle for expression as well as the other guys in the band.
But,
just in terms of anticipating what direction, you know, each new project is going to go in and what comes next. There's just this real element of art in the Flaming Lips.
Yeah, well, I think the more you know about art, I mean, you see, I think people oftentimes will describe the Flaming Lips as like, you know, an art rock band, and a lot of people probably don't know what that means, but I think that's a great compliment, you know, to be put in the ranks of a Frank Zappa or something like that. You know what I mean? I think it's a great compliment, but I think a lot of people would be like, well, what does that mean?
Right. It might be a little pretentious calling it an art rock
band. Well, I don't know. You know, it's like it's all art anyway. You know, everything in the world has an element of art about it. It's only once we try to, you know, go to a building and see art that we think, oh, this is art, and everything else isn't. But, you know, all the clothes we wear and all the meals we eat and all the buildings that we're in, you know, are somebody's art. Whether it's done well or great is up to you to decide. But I mean, it's everything is, I mean, you know, raising your children and you know, dressing yourself every day, it's all an element of art. You know, it's in our life. It is. That's why I think it's kind of invisible and all important both at the same time.
And you're going to be having an exhibition at an art center. So that is really fitting that would be going that way. And it's, you know, when people say, well, what is he going to do? Like do some paintings? We should kind of explain, it's an immersive sculptural audiovisual installation.
Right.
It says
I mean,
here.
Yeah. I mean, because we're on, you know, the radio and almost everything else you do in the world now, you can have like a visual helper there, you know, like here's a picture of it. And so I, you know, it's I get so used to it all it already being apparent what it is. But I like this idea. It's kind of a challenge. It's like describing, to a blind person what it would be like to, you know, have your hand up an elephant's butt or something, you know.
Could a blind person enjoy this exhibit?
I think they could very much, you know. I mean, especially one that's been, you know, very attuned to not having sight, because in the way that we do things, a lot of times it starts with music, because we're a rock group, or we're a musical group or whatever. But I think I'm very lucky that usually makes me react to this music, you know, whatever emotion or whatever is happening, and then that spurs the next thing, you know, to happen. And so if you come to this thing, you'll notice, it's called the King's Mouth. That's the main immersive sort of, the thing that you participate in. I guess we sort of call it, interactive, but interactive, I think, gets a little overused these days, you know? There's this shape, that it started off when we first built it was really just like a cylinder little shape that you go into, and you were meant to sort of lay on some, like, what would be bean bags or something in there, and you would look up at this projection that was happening, and you're sort of laying in there and all this stuff is happening above you. And then it sort of evolved into what it is now, where it's like the shape of it ends up looking like this big crazy face. And because we made this area on the top, we were trying to cover up where all the projectors and all the computers were on top. It looks like he's wearing a crown. And, and before we knew it, people were walking and saying, I want to go inside this big king's head there. And it sort of got its name from simply the way that we built it. And now we call it the King's Mouth or the King's Head, deciding what part of it you like. So, you know, all of it is a great sort of reminder of how things can evolve, you know. And because I do interviews about the King's Head or the King's Mouth, whatever we're going to call it, people say, well, how'd you come up with this idea? And I'm slightly embarrassed that I don't really remember, because it just would happen a little bit at a time. And if you walk into the Waterloo Center for the Arts tomorrow, it'll look so spectacular. And indeed it is, but it wasn't something that, I thought of in one great thing. We'd be making it and, you know, things would start to happen. And even the piece of music, I think the piece of music is even being edited a little bit today. It ends up being about a 14-minute, you know, we call it a piece of music because it's synchronized with this insane LED light show. And I think that even undersells it. You know, when you're in there, it is all around you. The way that the LED, it's these strings of lights, but because it's this long cylinder, the lights can sort of emanate from the ceiling almost directly onto you, you know, and we've synced up the motion of the lights and the sound and everything. And you kind of, I think you feel like after a couple of minutes, you really do relax as if you're inside this thing and you kind of just let it do whatever it's going to do, you know? And it's so, it surprised us how well it worked. There's an element that we were working on it today, and I've probably seen and experienced this little segment of the program probably 100 times, more than anybody else has. And when we turned it on today, we sat in there and we were surprised by it even again. It's just such a great, it's just a powerful thing. So, you know, what we would suggest is if you get to go inside the King's Head or the King's Mouth, whatever we want to call it, that you can go in from the beginning to the end, and it's about a 14-minute little adventure, you know. And yeah, it's fun, but it's hard to describe it, you know, because when we say video and right. music and all that, you're like, yeah, but because it's, you know, it's so all around you, it's different, it's more powerful. Yeah.
Okay, well, as you were describing it, I was thinking, oh, it's kind of like an isolation tank with lights and sound.
It is, in a way. I mean, even today, I was in there with one of the reporters from the local news, and like when you've seen a really great movie. You know, the movie ends and you remember, I'm going to walk out to my car. And the same thing happened. We were in there, and even though it's only 14 minutes, we were reminded, oh, wow, we're in this museum. Isn't this weird? You know, so that I always think that's a good sign that you've kind of escaped your priority.
So besides the King's Mouth, there are other aspects to the exhibition, right?
There are, and I'm trying to remember what all of them are. I remember we went through a big list about 7 or 8 months ago, and now when I showed up, I was like, oh yeah, these are all the things we talked about. There's a very strange homemade movie that's going to play. It's called Christmas on Mars, and this has, again, it's Flaming Lips music. The Flaming Lips themselves are actually in it. There's some other actors that you'll recognize as well, just friends of ours that have showed up. Fred Armisen is one. You'll recognize him from Saturday Night Live in Portlandia and stuff. And there is a sort of, we have this record called Zyrica, and it came out in 1997. And when it was released in 1997, the format that everything came out in back then were CDs. And we did this experimental release, in a sense, where it's music, but it's spread out over four separate CDs, which means you have to have four CD players and four separate units to play this thing on. And I think at the time when we made it, we thought this was normal. And now, you know, years have gone by and we realize, oh, we're the only ones that would do something as absurd as this, or would be allowed to do something as absurd as this. And there's a little corner of the museum is dedicated to that listening experience as well. And I think they've made it so you can easily press the buttons on the disc players and you get to experience as much of that as you want. And there are some videos that we've made that I think play. And then I think there's a series of drawings and paintings associated with the King's Head, King's Mouth thing as well. So it's pretty great. I mean, I was when I go through some of these things, I don't remember all the things that we've done. And they've made a nice collection of all these little offshoots that aren't really that well known about the stuff that the Flaming Lips have done. So I was kind of surprised by it as well.
Well, I think the things you mentioned would be fairly well known to fans of the Flaming Lips, or, you know, listeners to Iowa Public Radio.
Perhaps
would be aware of those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those were the two I was going to mention, you know, Christmas on Mars and Zyrica or Zyrica.
Yeah.
As I was trying to figure out, but you know, we won't get into the, as you have said, whatever you want to call it. But it's kind of a legendary project, and I was excited to see that it was going to be there.
Right. I mean, you know, it's one of these things that when we started to do it, you know, it was, though it's on four, you know, it ended up being presented on four CDs, which I, you know, by the mind that I have today seems insane. But at the time when we were doing it, we thought it could perhaps be 100 CDs, you know, and I remember our manager and some people from the Warner Bros., the record label, were trying to, you know, think, well, maybe it could be like 20 CDs and we would, you know, and we would be, you know, no, it's got to be this, it's got to be that. And little by little, you know, more rational minds prevailed, and I think it ended up being four CDs, and part of me was probably, oh, that's never going to work. And now I think it was like, what? How could this possibly? How could this possibly have been a good idea? But I do think it's the that these ideas that we are allowed to do them. I think that's what's so cool about it. And I think that's really is the main thrust of the Flaming Lips. What we do is that, you know, it's this great evolution of ideas. Our music, our stage show, even our personalities, I think, are this long encouraged evolution of who we are and what we want to be. And nothing has come in and stopped us yet.
Yeah, and not many bands last over 30 years. Not exactly the same personnel as when you started, of course, but
right.
That in itself is a, you know, great...
I think I'm lucky. I think it as time has gone on, I think it is part of my personality, you know, that I come from a big family, and I think I, in over time, would attract people that have those same values, you know. And now when we travel around, it looks like this giant family of, you know, of 20 freaks, you know, traveling around the country. And I think that even attracts more people like that. But I didn't know that, you know, when you're in your early 20s, you know, you don't know what your personality is, you know. But as time went on, I think I accepted, oh, yeah, I like this thing and having my family all here. And I think that was really, that part of it, I think I've been just really lucky.
You were just starting a band back then. And here we are, you know, all these years later. The new record is Oxy Melody. Congratulations on that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you.
I listened to it again earlier today, and I was thinking as I was listening, how is this different from psychedelic music of the 1960s that we know and love? And the answer I came up with was low end. they just couldn't do that bass back in those days.
I would. That's such a great, perfect. I mean, you couldn't have said it in less words. You're exactly right. I would say the same thing. I'm not sure a lot of people realize that, but you know, there is music that we've been recording in the past 4 or 5 years with this such, you know, you can get all this great, these sub frequencies and stuff now, and you can really exaggerate them. I oftentimes will listen to music from the 60s or early 70s, and I want it to have more low, this low frequency. You know, I keep turning my speakers up, but it is. And I think our producer, Dave Fridman, he is a master of that. A lot of people don't know that he's actually a bass player. You know, if there was an instrument that he was going to play. And I think he's really, this could be the record that has the most low end frequency on it. And I do caution people, don't turn your stereo up too loud because it might blow it up, you know.
And what if they're listening in earbuds, you know? I mean,
I don't think it would harm you in that way.
Probably
you
not.
You know, no. I don't think it's, you know.
It's not the same.
Yeah, I think as big as those speakers are, I think you'd have to really have some big speakers to hurt your ears.
But, no harm.
But I'm pretty, you know, I'm pretty used to it, so be careful.
I was listening to it on a, you know, bigger speakers.
Yeah.
Got the effect. It struck me. sounded great. And Dave Fridman, you've worked with him since 1990 on every single
finalist? Not everything. I mean, I think there was maybe one record that he couldn't be a part of. But he used to be a part of a group called Mercury Rev, and I think they were doing something. But virtually everything else that we've done since really the very late 80s, we've been lucky enough to be able to have him involved with us, yeah.
So he's kind of like another band member in that respect. He's your George Martin,
I think, so to speak. He would say, if you like the records I've made with him, yes, I'm part of it. But if you don't like it, no, I'm just the just the producer. I think so. I think we welcome his, what his perspective and the changes and the things that he wants to sees in what we present to him. Sometimes it's he's intense, and sometimes you don't want to accept these changes that he'll make. But I think that's why we work with each other. He does something that I don't do. Yeah.
Oxymelody, it's being looked at as kind of like a return to the more melodic song oriented kind of Flaming Lips album.
Yep.
Like the Soft Bulletin or Yoshimi. And, as we're talking earlier about the longevity of the band, it also occurred to me as I was listening earlier today that after Yoshimi, you kind of went off in different directions. And now, you've taken your time to come back to that quote unquote kind of album, and I think that has something to do with how long Flaming Lips have thrived, that you didn't, work that angle into the ground, the Soft Bulletin over and over again.
Right. Well, I think people give us too much credit to know that we would be able to do that, or to know that it was a sound. I think now the Soft Bulletin record that you were talking about, we started to record that in 1997. It came out in 1999, so it's already a very old record. Depending on how old you are, it can be quite old. And the Yoshimi Battles of the Pink Robots came out a couple of years after that in 2002. So that's already, it's 15 years ago that came out. So I think us having that amount of time, and we get a little bit of perspective about, oh, I see. Well, we could be perceived this way and could be perceived that way. But when you're in the middle of it, I don't think you have any idea of how you're actually perceived. There's what you think you are, and there's what people will say that you are. And you don't always agree with them or listen to them, for whatever the reason. But now that I have that perspective, I would agree. I think there's those albums and this album have more in common and more thematic and more, I don't know. It's not often that we'll spend 2 or 3 years making a record, but this record is like that.
Well, again, it's a great record. And we mentioned, we threw the term psychedelic out there earlier, and I know that you're always called a psychedelic band. What's your definition of psychedelic?
Well, that's a curious thing because, when we started in the very early 80s, the main inspiration I think we had came from punk rock, But when we would talk about punk rock in the very late 70s, early 80s, it had a different connotation, and we would run into groups like the Meat Puppets or even the Butthole Surfers. And those, we considered them to be very punk rock, even though I think by now punk rock has become a look and a sound that's kind of categorized, But back then it wasn't. Punk rock was a way that you did things. It wasn't a sound or a look. And I think we like the idea that you could be like a punk rock group and just do your own thing, play by your own rules. And that meant if you wanted to, play melodic music with, and have instruments that aren't just all trying to be aggressive or anti something, that would be a version of punk rock as well. The very first definition that we liked, that the way someone put punk rock to us when they said, well, punk rock means, you're just doing your thing, was we played with this group called the Minutemen. Back, I think it was 1984, we played with them. And Mike Watt, who still makes music today, still considered one of the, the wisest, living people from the late 70s, early 80s punk rock days. That's the way he presented it to us. It's just do your thing, your way, And we weren't waiting on a record company to come and discover us. We didn't even know what that was, And so I think nowadays when we say, yeah, we're kind of like, you know, we considered like that we're kind of punk rock, but we were allowed to take a bunch of acid. And I think people get confused by the punk rock part of it. But, and I think psychedelic music has, depending on, you know, how old you are, it probably has a different meaning to you. So sometimes I'm talking to people and we say psychedelic music and they're thinking of bands even like My Bloody Valentine or something. I'd say that's true. Other times, you know, you're talking to people and they're thinking of the Jefferson Airplane or something, you know. So, but I think we would fall into that. I don't think there would be very much that we would do that you wouldn't say, okay, and that works. But I think it's a big, big inclusive term now.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was a long answer to a short question. But I like it, though. You know, psychedelic, mind-expanding, surreal, I think those things could apply to the Flaming Lips. I like to think of it as there's an aspect of waking up the listener, kind of like, wake up, look around you. You know, it's not...
Oh, I like that. See, now just, that's that more enlightening part of psychedelic and psychedelic drugs and stuff that people forget is true to people, especially if you're... Depending on how you've grown up, if that zap of awareness isn't already in you, that's a great compliment.
Yeah, and you know, like everything else we've said about the Flaming Lips, you mentioned a soft bulletin. You know, you couldn't have necessarily kept going that way if you'd thought about it. A lot of this is going on another level. That's
well,
not
right.
Thinking about it.
Yeah, I mean, we wouldn't have known what to do. I mean, at the time, we didn't know how we made the soft bulletin, and we wouldn't have even known how to keep it going, you know? And I think to follow our desire of what we want to do is probably the best thing that we should do. You know, we're not, I sometimes think of even like groups like Radiohead. I think that they probably are making a choice that they could do something that maybe is more commercial, and they go this other way. I think so. I mean, I absolutely love most of the stuff that they've done over the past, you know, 15 years or so. But we're not like that. You know, it's not like we're not making a choice to be more, you know, easy to listen to or hard to listen to. We're simply doing this thing that we like. And I can understand where some of it would be more difficult than others now. But when we're making it, that doesn't really occur to us. We're just simply doing the thing that we like to do.
Well, the reception is tomorrow night. Actually, if you're hearing this on February 16th, it's on February 16th. Works by Wayne Coyne featuring King's Mouth. It's at the Waterloo Center for the Arts. Free opening reception at 7 p.m. And you'll be there, right?
I will be there, yeah. I don't know what we do with these things. It's oftentimes you just get drunk and have fun. So, yeah. I'll help anybody out that has questions about why do you do what you do, Wayne?
Is this exhibit, has this been in other locales?
Not in this big of a, you know, of a collection of stuff. The King's Mouth has been at just one other museum, one in Baltimore. And it was, you know, part of another, there was a bigger exhibit, not of our stuff, but a bigger collection of stuff. And so, but I believe there'll be more and more of this type of museum thing. I think especially American museums really need this kind of thing where you go in and it's not just old paintings on a wall or something, you know, where it is a new experience that you can't just see it in a video or look at it on your phone. You have to be there and be part of it.
Wayne Coyne, thanks for talking with us.
All right, thank you. Yeah, it worked out good.
I'm Mark Simmet for Iowa Public Radio Studio One.
Yeah.